Blog Talk Radio.
Tonight is a particular honor for me because, let's face it, my presence on this stage is pretty unlikely. My father was a foreign student, born and raised in a small village in Kenya. He grew up herding goats, went to school in a tin roof shack. His father, my grandfather, was a cook.
Welcome to Current Events with Patrick Cook. I'm your host, Patrick Cook, coming to you live from Dallas, Texas, as I do every Sunday at 4 p.m. Central Time, 5 o'clock Eastern. We are the number one resource for small businesses and nonprofits. To learn how you can showcase your business or nonprofit, go to our website at TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com and click on affiliates for details. Happy Mother's Day to everybody out there. Happy Mother's Day to all the wonderful mothers. We love you, we love you, and we love you. We hope you're enjoying your day that has been set aside to recognize you and all the wonderful things that you do. Now, we're about to hit election season. And accordingly, we've had our first GOP presidential debate this week. And man, it was almost like watching paint dry. So today's topic is really fitting, and we're going to continue the conversation as we did last week. And we want to pose a new question. I want to ask the very simple question about the grand old party. Should we have to show our IDs to vote? You know, recently there have been a lot of talk about showing your IDs and vote. So we want to talk about that today. And I would love to get your comments on this issue. So sound the alarm. Get on Facebook, Twitter, Foursquare, or Tumblr. Send out emails and text messages. Call your friends and family members and tell them to tune in right now to Current Events with Patrick Cook. To join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Again, the number is 323-580-5712. And for those of you that are listening via Blog Talk Radio, click the follow button. Leave your comments or follow me on Twitter at TaylorMade101. And if you mention me, I'm going to be reading your tweets live on the air. But first, let's take a look at our current events. Now, I would be remiss if I didn't mention Bin Laden's death. Now, I know you've been inundated with all of the talk this week about what happened. And last Sunday, a few hours after the show, Facebook and Twitter was blowing up. Everyone was saying the president is about to make an announcement. Now, he could have waited until the next morning, but how fitting it was for him to interrupt Donald Trump's show. But I digress. At any rate, he made the announcement shortly before midnight Eastern time that Osama bin Laden was dead. And, of course, a lot of people went out in celebration of it and everything. I have mixed feelings about that, but people have been getting in trouble about that all week long. So, nevertheless, tonight the president will be on 60 Minutes to talk a little bit about the incident. Now, keep in mind this episode was taped on May 4th last week, but I think, and this is a prediction now, I think it's probably going to be the highest rated 60 Minutes show ever. So you do not want to miss tonight's episode. So check your local listings for 60 Minutes in your area. Also this week, and it was an article in the Wall Street Journal that talked about the firing of the Oprah Winfrey Network's CEO. In fact, the article said that the Oprah Winfrey Network fired its top executive, Christina Norman, after dissatisfaction with the four-month-old channel's ratings. People familiar with this matter said, "Now the network, which is jointly owned by Oprah Winfrey and Discovery Communications, said Friday that Peter Duguri, Discover's chief operating officer, is replacing Ms. Norman as CEO on an interim basis, effectively immediately. Mr. Luguri will continue to serve as chief operating officer at Discovery while heading up the Oprah Winfrey Network. In the middle of last week, the board members decided to replace Ms. Norman because they felt the channel needed new leadership to better establish itself, especially as Oprah begins to turn her full attention to the network this month as her syndicated show ends, that people familiar with the matter said. They've learned a lot over the 4 months, and now it is time to learn where the network's going, said Mr. Luguri. There is a need for a fresh perspective which allows everyone to do their best work. Ms. Norman, the former president at MTV, was unable to respond to the Wall Street Journal. Now, I don't know if you heard this also, Bobby Jindal released his birth certificate. So he was hoping to avoid similar struggles that between the President Obama and the so-called Bertha movement. Louisiana Governor Bobby Jindal released his own birth certificate on Friday. Jindal, who is Indian heritage, publicly issued the document, knowing that his own status will be certainly examined in the event he ends up on a presidential ticket. Now, he was born Pinyush Jindal on June 10, 1971. The former congressman arrived in the U.S. in utero. His mother, Raj Jindal, was 3 months pregnant and moving to Baton Rouge with a scholarship offered to study nuclear physics at LSU. Now, according to a Jindal spokesperson, the governor's parents entered the United States in 1971 on green card secured through Bobby's father, Amor Jindal, and his participation in a program by the federal government to increase the number of engineers. Also, this week, former New Orleans Mayor Ray Nagin released, he's going to be releasing his memoirs for what happened in Katrina. There are some reports out here that talks about the book will be released on June 8th via Amazon. Now, Martin Luther King Jr. once said, "The ultimate measure of a man is not where he stands in moments of comfort and convenience, but where he stands at times of challenge and controversy." Within the last decade, there have been several examples that stand out to me. Number one, President Obama, during his first few years of his presidency, has underwent tremendous amount of challenges. And I would say Mayor Rudy Giuliani during the September 11th attacks. And also, I would have to say Mayor Ray Nagin during Hurricane Katrina. And fortunately, I had the distinct pleasure of meeting Mayor Ray Nagin not too long after Katrina. And I can say today, as I said back then, I raised my glass to him and all the things that he tried to do with respect to that tragedy taking place down in Korea. He had enormous amount of poise during that event and amount of fortitude to be able to withstand all of the things that did not happen in support of his city while he was there. Now, the publicist said that he did not immediately answer the call and email, but Nagin is perhaps best known for his desperate public plea to federal officials to get off your bleep, I'm not going to say the word, and do something as his city stood on the water. But I think it's going to be some interesting topics in that book. I would encourage you to go out and get it as soon as it is released. But I would like to know what you think he's going to talk about. So I would love to get your comments on these and on all of these issues. So to join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. We're going to take a quick break, and when we return, we're going to open up the phone lines, take your calls, and get my co-host, Jima, to weigh in on these and other issues. Be back in a moment.
Current Events with Patrick Cook is joining the fight with First Lady Michelle Obama to help feed hungry children and stop childhood obesity. During the school year, many children receive free and reduced-price breakfast and lunch as a result of the school breakfast and national school lunch programs. However, when the last bell sounds, marking the end of the school year, for many, it marks the beginning of hunger that will plague them throughout the summer. Here at Current Events, we're going to fill that nutrition gap and make sure children can get the nutritious meals they need. To learn how you can help with this worthy cause, go to TaylorMade101.com and click on Hunger Free. That's TaylorMade101.com and click on Hunger Free.
Cook Enterprises have joined forces with Google Inc. and Amazon.com. With this new partnership, our companies, TaylorMade Training and Consulting, Current Events, and Ask Jima, can now offer you the best deals 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Whether you're looking for a discounted book for your book club or a very special gift for a friend, family member, or loved one, TaylorMade's Marketplace is where you should go first. Visit our website at TaylorMade101.com and click on Marketplace to get the best deals today.
Welcome back to Current Events with Patrick Cook. We are going to open up the phone lines and hear from our listeners. In the meantime, Jima, I'd like you to weigh in on a few of these issues. So for the callers out there to join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Again, that number is 323-580-5712. Jima, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Well, first and foremost, let me say Happy Mother's Day.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Now, there has been an interesting set of developments over the last week. First, President Obama flies down to the South to be with the victims of the terrible storm. Then, on Saturday, he absolutely pulverizes Donald Trump at the White House Correspondents' Dinner. On the very next day, he gives the order to annihilate Osama bin Laden. Then he flies down to visit the firefighters and the 101st Airborne Division at Fort Campbell. Man, this president is amazing. Now, Jima, what do you think he's going to say tonight on 60 Minutes?
Well, I think he'll speak to probably a little bit of some of the thought process that went into making that final decision to go ahead. They had enough intelligence that was reliable to know that that was the location of bin Laden, or however you want to pronounce it. And so I think he would speak a little bit about that. But, you know, he is a man of integrity. So he's not going to talk a lot about it. He's going to give us enough for us to be engaged in the conversation, but that's just one of many things he said he was going to do. So what I love about this president is that he doesn't belabor a point. So he's not going to stay there as though his job is done as president. I'm pretty sure he'll probably talk a little bit about the jobs numbers that came out with mixed reviews in terms of the number of new jobs created, but yet, you know, unemployment rose a little bit. So I'm pretty sure he's going to talk about that because at the end of the day, that's what people are talking about, and they're talking about the price of gas. So I'm sure he will mention those two things because the order to do what happened on Monday is just one of, you know, several things that's on his to-do list or his bucket list, so to speak. And so he can do, as you often say, check. He's done that. He can check that off. Now, he has a lot of things he can check off as president now. I'm not going to try to minimize what he's done, but if I know him well in terms of how he presents himself to the public, he's not going to sit down, you know. He's already getting himself prepared for this next election cycle.
So now you know as well as I do, there was much to do about nothing when it comes to releasing these photos. So they showed a little clip about some of the things that he may say tonight on 60 Minutes, and one of them was about releasing this photo. So my question to you and to the callers out there, do you think he should release the photos? Why or why not?
No, I think this is, as you stated, much ado about nothing. I believe that whoever this person was, he's no more, for two reasons. You have witnesses that was there in the room, and I'm pretty sure if he was not who they say he was, those witnesses would have now had something to say. And we have not heard that yet. You've also heard that from, you know, people in the movement, so to speak, that, yes, you know, he is dead. So I'm not sure what releasing the pictures are going to do. I don't have a high need to see them. The fact that even the video they released now showing a very elderly-looking leader sitting there watching himself on TV, and then all the speculation of how he would dye his beard so he would appear a certain way, which I thought was interesting because he never did seem to age, but then we never knew when all these quote-unquote videos were made anyway. But to see an elderly man sitting there watching himself, and then I think as they began to go through the data that they did receive off of the computer and all, you know, all the memory sticks that they kept, that they were able to retrieve, I think different bits and pieces will come out. But in terms of the validation that he has in fact been killed, I'm satisfied with what they've given right now. I really need to see a picture of a dead body, you know.
Well, come on now. You just said that. There was people out there, and even yourself had questions about him aging and about where he looked and stuff like that. But shouldn't the people, I mean, if you're going to come out and announce something like this, shouldn't the people have the right to get some further evidence?
They can have a right all day long, but I think he's made his point. I think he's made his statement. We're not putting him out. And that's what I really, also another thing I really admire in this president, when he makes his mind and he's resolved, you know. And so I don't think anything, all the probing of questions from the media, and what is that really all about? I mean, I think it was a comedian that said, you know, this is the first time a black man had to prove that he did kill somebody. I mean, this is the craziest thing I've seen in my life. You know, now you got to go out and prove that he didn't kill somebody. You know, but I think everything he's done over the last week, as you stated in your opening, from going down to Alabama last week to the correspondence dinner on Saturday, to making this announcement on Sunday, to then going to the two places where these Navy SEALs came from and spending time with them, to going to Ground Zero and meeting with survivors and victims of parents and children. I think he has done an awful lot in the last. He's done more in these last 7 days, in my opinion, because it's been different sorts of things he's completed. So I don't really have a high need to see the photographs. It's not going to change my mind about anything. I mean, if he wasn't dead, I think we would know. I really think somebody would have already mentioned it. So. Because there's no way they would, you know, let it, you know, go around the world that he's dead and he's not. He would have came out by now. So.
Yeah, but you think if they keep pushing the issue, that he would eventually release the photos? I mean, for after all, they pushed for several years without letting up on his birth certificate, and that's something that's personal to him. That there was obviously proof that he was here, born here. That he's a natural born citizen, but yet the people just did not give up. I mean, you talk about his resolve, but he eventually released the birth certificate. Don't you think he's going to eventually release the photos?
No, because those are two separate issues. His birth certificate had nothing to do with national security and keeping America safe, releasing any more photos could have a direct impact on how we live our daily lives. So I don't think the two go together, and so I don't think he will. I think he's whatever he's released thus far in terms of the videos that they've come out. Now that was something different because I didn't even think he was going to release that. So when those videos came out on yesterday, of course with all the audio being taken out, but when those videos came out yesterday showing him and how he was living and in the environment in which he was living in. That says something about who this man was as well. So I don't think we need a photo of a picture of him dead. I don't think I need to see that, especially if this is as gruesome as they say it is. And like I stated, he was still somebody's husband and somebody's father, regardless of how we feel about them. And like you, I had mixed emotions, too, about all the celebrations and whatnot that was happening. So if it's true that his daughter was actually in the room, what good would it do her to see it? She's seen that already.
Mm-hmm. So I get your point. I mean, it's obvious that the president is trying to raise the bar here. He's trying to take the high road and says, yes, we actually defeated one of our enemies, but we don't have to go out and celebrate it. Yes, we annihilated bin Laden, but we don't have to, rub the country's face in it because, any death is bad, regardless of, love your enemy and as you love yourself.
Right.
We shouldn't be out there trying to do all of those things, so I have to agree with you. So I mentioned the president's birth certificate, and I talked about Bobby Jindal releasing his birth certificate. Now, what's that all about?
And because he wants to stay relevant in mainstream media, and so he has to do these things to keep his name relevant. So one day, whenever he decides to run for president, his name will have some recognition. There's no need, and probably because he's made a statement in his state that if someone in his state brings a bill to show that you have to have been born in the United States to be president, he would sign it. So I'm pretty sure, there was some pushback, like, what, where is that coming from? And so he probably figured, well, I might as well put mine on out there. Not that anyone asked for it, and they do things very differently in Louisiana, so he could have really kept his birth certificate because even if he decides to run for president, I'm not quite sure when he would win.
Now, I like the idea of you saying he's trying to inject himself back into the media because right now there's really no mainstream, I'll put that in quotes, GOP candidate right now. So I guess what he's trying to do is to say, hey, over here, look at me. Look at what I'm doing. So that's interesting that you would put it like that. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. To join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. Now, you remember several years ago, we went out to Louisiana, I think, for a graduation out there, and it was shortly after Katrina, and we met Mayor Ray Nagin. Now, he's about to release his memoirs. What do you think he's going to talk about the most?
I think he's going to talk about probably some of the resolution of those people that did make it and how difficult a time it was for those that stayed behind, how he felt isolated and not necessarily received a lot of support from not only federal government but the local government there initially. And if he plans not to ever run for public office again, he'll be very truthful about how he feels about that time and how he felt let down and left behind himself. So I'm hoping that it's not just a retelling of what we already know, but from the perspective of the person who was in charge at the time things were going down, and maybe some lessons learned as well in terms of what he could have done differently, or maybe something he could have made done faster. Since it's been time now, he's had some time to reflect back on it, not being in public office now for a little bit over a year or so. I think it should be a good read. I think it should be one that speaks to the heart of the matter in terms of not only how he felt, but how his constituents felt that relied on him. Because in a city such as New Orleans, you know, people own their mayors. They say, that's my mayor. And they own, you know, they felt like he was one of them and, you know, were somewhat disappointed in him as well. So he'll probably talk a little bit about all of that.
You know, I get a sense that he was really disappointed. You know, you could always tell a person that has initially when they have a lot of energy, they go into a situation and they have, you know, have a dream and motivation and vision, and they go out and they keep trying and pushing, you know, they go against odds, you know, when challenging trials come, they just keep going. But when Katrina hit and he saw the devastation that was across the New Orleans area, and he was, you know, raising his hand, you know, yelling out, calling for help. And it's like no one came. And so it's almost like as if it let the air out of all of those things that, you know, all of the vision, the mental fortitude, the willingness. And, you know, it seems like it just let the air out of everything that he had in him, and which ultimately made him very, very disappointed. And so I expect to see out of the book bit about the disappointment that he had for the federal government coming to the aid of just people. Not to the aid of black people, but to the aid of humanity when people were just suffering and, you know, people were standing over on top of roofs and, you know, bodies were floating and families were separated and the levees breaking down. And for him to be, you know, calling for help, for him not to get the help that I believe that was warranted, I believe that he felt was warranted at the time, I think it's going to be a lot of that in the book.
I agree with that, but I think also when you go back and you look at all that, that's why I say lessons learned. What was going on in this, you know, what part of the system was broke, that broke down? You know, what part of the system just was not equipped to deal with all that had happened and what was happening. So there's a lot, I think there's a lot of that he'll talk about. And even the system that was in place to protect and serve, you know, it was not, it didn't do all that it was supposed to do either, you know. So, you know, there's been some issues around some of the police officers that's been charged with different things. So there was a lot that happened on his watch. Those things that he had some control over and those things that he did not. And I agree with you, standing there needing some help, and it's just like the person on the side of the road who has a flat tire and everybody just drives by. You know, like you see that I have a flat, you know, can somebody help me? You know, or even, you know, we can even bring in more recent with the young man whose mother drove the kids in the car. There were several cars that drove by him as he was running down that street soaking wet.
Mm-hmm.
Before one person stopped to help him, and so, you know, that's probably how he felt. I'm there's people coming by me. There's people not returning my calls. There's people sitting at home watching this on TV,
right,
and not responding. You know, and that's a sad state. That's a sad place to be in as a country. Excuse me. In my opinion, that was one of our darkest moments. That was one of our darkest moments in terms of at the beginning. Now, as time went on, you know, we rallied and did what we needed to do. But and having worked down there for some time, you know, I really never saw it get back to where it was. And maybe it's not supposed to get back to where it was. But it has been a difficult time, but those hours immediately after everything happened. So I'm pretty sure he's going to talk a lot about that. I would if I had the opportunity to share my story.
You know, I would too. I would talk about, you know, as I stated earlier, about, you know, the disappointment that I had with the system and everything and supporting the system. But what I would like to see, this is what I said earlier, what I thought was in it, but what I would like to see is something that you mentioned about the lessons learned. And I want to take it one step further. Remember or recall the book that was published after September the 11th. There was a book published, the 9/11 Commission Report, and it talked about the breakdown of the system. And it laid out all of the gaps that we had in our system, which I believe to this day have not been totally filled. But for the most part, it laid it out. It would be nice to see in this book a similar type of outline to say, you know, let me voice my frustrations with the system first and foremost. Let me talk about how disappointed I was. Let me talk about how I believe that the system failed me and the hundreds of people, or the thousands of people in the city of New Orleans. But yet, I still want to be able to outline some of the gaps that I think our system have and that we will continue to have if we don't fix these things. I think he would be doing the United States a great disservice if he did not at least attempt to make that to address that in this book.
I agree with that. I agree with that wholeheartedly. There has to be some looking forward in terms of what are the things we have in place now that if this was to happen again, we would be better strategically prepared to deal with it. Because a lot of it came down and it was just not, they were not strategic in how they responded, how people were notified. I mean, what is it in the electronic system in terms of notification, and how do you get people out of an area that has no transportation and yet you tell them to leave? How do they get out? You know, how do you ensure that you have an evacuation plan that can be implemented immediately? And so there has to be drills that take place, and there has to be some collaboration across disciplines, across agencies, so that it doesn't get bogged down in systemic issues around, well, that's not my agency's job or that. So hopefully there's been some strategic planning around some of those issues of collaboration, where they will begin to collaborate before something happens and have a plan in place for when it does happen.
I agree. Up next, we're going to talk about the issue that has perplexed me, I'm going to say. There has been a lot of talk about voters showing their IDs prior to voting. So the question I want to pose to the listening audience out there is this a surefire way to prevent voter fraud, or is this the 21st century poll tax? When we return, we want to hear from you. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook.
Current Events with Patrick Cook is joining the fight with First Lady Michelle Obama to help feed hungry children and stop childhood obesity. During the school year, many children receive free and reduced price breakfast and lunch as a result of the school breakfast and national school lunch programs. However, when the last bell sounds, marking the end of the school year, for many, it marks the beginning of hunger that will plague them throughout the summer. Here at Current Events, we're going to fill that nutrition gap and make sure children can get the nutritious meals they need. To learn how you can help with this worthy cause, go to TaylorMade101.com and click on Hunger Free. That's TaylorMade101.com and click on Hunger Free.
Cook Enterprises have joined forces with Google Inc. and Amazon.com. With this new partnership, our companies, TaylorMade Training and Consulting, Current Events, and Ask Jima, can now offer you the best deals 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Whether you're looking for a discounted book for your book club or a very special gift for a friend, family member, or loved one, TaylorMade's Marketplace is where you should go first. Visit our website at TaylorMade101.com and click on Marketplace to get the best deals today.
Welcome back to Current Events with Patrick Cook. We're going to continue to open up the phone lines and hear from our listeners. In the meantime, Jima and I are going to talk about an issue that has really, really perplexed me. Now, there was an interesting article posted on the sodahead.com website, and it sums up the debate, I thought, very well for voter IDs. The article states, bringing to mind the poll taxes on an earlier racially divided era, the New York Times reports that Republican legislatures and governors across the country are flexing their newly acquired powers by rewriting voting laws to make it harder for young voters, the poor, and African Americans to cast ballots. Not coincidentally, these are groups that typically vote Democratic, and the attempted changes are coming in advance of the 2012 presidential race. Waving the banner of fear over what the paper described as a non-existent flood of voter fraud, these empowered GOP politicos are pushing through new laws that would demand citizens be required to show a government-issued ID before they can vote. This has been a Republican priority for years, but now more than two-thirds of states, let me say that again, but now more than two-thirds of states have adopted or are working on such laws. A group of civil rights lawyers have criticized the move, describing it to the Times as the largest legislative effort to scale back voting rights in a century. Now, after reading the article, I decided to open up the debate on this show to hear from you. So, what will it be? The question I have for the listening audience is this. Is this a surefire way to prevent voter fraud, or is this the 21st century poll tax? Jimmy, what do you say? Do the Republicans have a right this time?
No, they do not have a right this time. And one of the states that I read recently that has one of the most strictest policies and laws in place as it relates to voting, the state of Indiana, they even stated that this does not have anything, and we would have no impact on voter fraud, and that there is not a lot of voter fraud. So the language they've chosen to use is the language that people like to hear in terms of fraud or something has been taken away from them, or they've been taken advantage of. So once again, you can play on my fears, play on my insecurities, and all those things. And so I'll think it's a good idea. But in reality, there is not a lot of voter fraud across the country, period. But that's been the language they've chosen to use to get people to think this is a good idea.
Now, come on, Jimmy. Now, you know, when you're talking about voter fraud, you know, one case is too many. So a lot.
What's the one case, though? So the one case means that for a city such as Atlanta that does not have a Department of Motor Vehicle placed in its city limits, that has a high number of people of color in its city limits, that I have to now find a way to get outside of my city limits to get this particular ID made that you want me to have made, so that I can go and vote because of maybe an incident of voter fraud. Maybe the issues that they're talking about is hypothetical, and there's data. I don't believe there's been any data submitted that supports that we have a high voter fraud epidemic in the United States as it relates to elections.
Okay.
It's interesting that I don't recall. Wait a minute, though. I think it's interesting. I don't recall there being such a push around these sorts of things prior to, maybe 2006. Maybe I don't recall even hearing any information about it. So it's got to wonder. Well, when did this start? And how many cases has there been? And have there been real cases, or we thought they were cases? So who's doing the, who's monitoring this process? That's all I.
I mean, I hear you, and I understand. You know, and I'm just suggesting that if there are reported cases of voter fraud, then there we should address them. That's all I'm saying. I think we should address them.
I agree with that. I agree with that. If there are, but we need to address what's the issue. I mean, is the issue that I need to have, because when I go and vote, I don't have to show my photo ID unless I didn't bring my registration card. If I have my registration card, then that proves that I am a registered voter. They then take my registration card and my name and go down this list that has my name and has what district I'm in and lets me know whether or not I'm even in the right line, polling place, and all of that. So they have all these measures already in place. So now I have to come with my voter registration card and my photo ID.
Well, what's to say that you were not handed your voter's registration card by someone else? There's no way to verify that you are that person in the card. The photo ID is something that that kind of identifies you are that person on the card. I mean, doesn't that make sense?
Okay, how about this, though? Now, some places, it's not just that it's a driver's license. It has to be a state-issued piece of identification or a passport or a military ID. So if I'm in the city of Atlanta and I don't drive and there's no DMV in my city, how do I get out to wherever the nearest location is to get this state-issued ID?
Well,
if you won't take, you know, something from the library or something from somewhere else that might have on it. How is that, you know, helping the situation? Seems to me that as the article presented itself, it's going to do more to lock out than bring out and prevent people from voting than it's going to prevent voter fraud.
But the purpose is not only just for identification purposes, it's also to ensure that we don't have any illegals or convicted felons or anybody else that's under the age voting when they shouldn't be voting.
But if you take my voter registration card and you at when you're going down this stack of names on this paper and you cross-reference that, aren't you going to be able to cross-reference whether or not all that other stuff is there? Because if I can't vote, then I'm not going to have a voter registration card because I'm not eligible to receive a voter registration card if I'm a convicted felon or if I'm illegal, right?
That is correct.
So that argument doesn't make sense to me.
Well, let's assume that the claims are legit about voter fraud, because I'm sure there's some data out there to support that. And if you know that there are some ineligible people to vote, what do you propose that we do then if you're not going to show ID your ID?
Well, I don't think it's always an either or. What's the issue? If the issue is to ensure that we have registered voters that can vote, which means that's why they registered. If you are a voter and you have everything in place to be a registered voter, those are the people who are voting. If you can't vote, you shouldn't even get a registration card. So the process is broken down in the registration part, not necessarily, you know, the people showing up to vote. So whatever's going on when you go register, it seems to be something that needs to look at, not when you already at the polling site.
Well, there are a lot of cases when people's names are not, even at registered voters, their names are not on the list. So, I mean, yeah, in a perfect world, you're right. You would expect the system to work as designed. People that are registered would show up on that list, and then you take in your voter's registration card, you look at the list, and you have a one-for-one matching. But in a lot of cases, people's names are not listed on that sheet. So what do you propose then that a person does if they if they're there to vote and they're not on that list? They need to have an ID.
Right, and that's what I'm saying. In my opinion, I think that the entire election voter system is broken. And it has been for a long time because historically over the years on during times of major elections, you have people every single time talk about they have been turned away from the polls because their name wasn't on the list.
Mm-hmm,
they have been
mm-hmm.
turned away from polls because in the wrong polling place, or the times changed, or this happened. The place runs out of forms. It has got to be the most inept process and people being there that I've seen in a long time. There's always an issue. So it's not just me coming to the voter registration card, but the entire process is off. So somebody needs to investigate that part of it in terms of who manages that? Who monitors, you know, that particular system? Where does that fall at under the government? Who's over that? And I know it's different per state, per county, per city, but there has to be something that is similar in those things, because if not, it's not ever going to get better. And even, like I stated, with the state of Indiana, who has one of the toughest toughest systems in terms of voting, they say that there has never been an incident, never been an incident reported of voter information fraud in the history of the state.
Okay, we're going to go to our phone
line
right now and then take some calls.
Okay.
Welcome to Current Events. Give us your name
Hello.
And where you're calling from.
Hi, this is the Esquire, Abby's Health, also known as the Motor City Maharani. How are you, Mr. Cook?
Absolutely wonderful. Happy Mother's Day. How are you?
Thank you. I'm wonderful, splendid, and excelsior, excelsior indeed. Thank you, Mr. Cook. Wonderful show as always. I always enjoy listening to you whenever I get a break in between my hectic schedule.
That's wonderful. We really appreciate you joining us.
Yes, sir. Go ahead.
So we're talking about showing your ID to vote. We kind of want to know. I mean, some people have equated showing your ID as a 21st century poll tax, and so I'm suggesting that people should show their IDs because there is no way to verify who a person is with just the voter registration card. So what's your take on this?
You know, I totally agree with you, Mr. Cook. And, you know, it's mandatory even here in the state of Michigan that you have to show your ID card if you don't have your voter's registration card. And at some precincts, because they've been having issues regarding, you know, one's, you know, eligibility to vote, some, you know, areas require both. But I believe it's validity that really is the caption in that particular instance. Because you think about it, if you're going to make a financial transaction, you have to present identification. If you're going to, withdraw any degree of funds from your financial institution, you have to present identification. You want a birth certificate, you have to present identification. So, yes, I believe it's mandatory to protect the integrity of the individual as well as the establishment.
So, but here's my counter to that. I don't have a problem with showing the identification, but when you now say that, it has to be a valid piece of identification. It can't be an expired student ID or an expired state-issue ID card. Well, if I don't go anywhere, and about the extent of what I do on a daily basis, it doesn't require me to show my ID for nothing for the time I'm ready to go and vote. What was my motivation to spend money if I'm on that lower economic scale, updated ID card, if I'm only really being called a task on it 2 to 4 years? So, I think some of that, you know, has a part in it, too.
Right. Right, but you know something I can say to that defense is that here in the state of Michigan, I can speak for all the states, you don't have to just buy another ID card. They will actually give you a sticker at the Secretary of State that's free of charge that will actually update your identification card.
Well, that's good. I know it's not like that everywhere, but that's good.
Right, it's
that's
not.
Good.
Yes. that's good, right? Because, you know, what are they, $10 now for that? And, what, $20 for, you know, a driver's license? Yeah, that is costly, but they do try to make amends for that by allowing us to get stickers. As long as the sticker is up and current, you're up and running. But I think just for the identification's sake, it needs to be done, because with so many things happening in a way of character theft and identity theft, you can never be too sure.
So, Jima, do you how then do we propose that if showing your ID is going to prohibit people from voting, then how do we get more people engaged in making sure they have the right identification?
I think something needs to with the state of Michigan. Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No, go
you
ahead,
go on,
go
then
ahead,
I'll take it. Okay, thank you so much, dear. In the state of Michigan, primarily our secretary, our city clerk's office, and the Department of the Election Commission, you know, sends our correspondences, you know, 3 to 4 weeks before the actual election that takes place, and they list the information that you need to have in order to vote, you know, in order to make sure that you get to the right precincts. And that's another reason why identification is so very crucial, because if you're out of your precinct and you go waste a trip going over there to vote and they turn you around, you're going to be real frustrated. So they actually said, you know your precinct and your delegation. They have a map drawn up, you know, according to your zip codes, so you'll know where to go and where to cast your vote. Then they tell you that you need to have your valid, you know, up-to-date voter's registration card, or else present, you know, your photogenic identification, which is a driver's license or a state ID card. Then they tell you, you know, the hours and operation of the polls areas that you vote. So they're very strategic here, because they ran into a lot of, you know, niches and glitches in the past, and citizens were really disenfranchised and felt disemboweled with the system. And so when we, the citizens, spoke up, they got up and got on their pony. And that, you know, that avoids a lot of turbulence and a lot of frustration at the voting precincts and areas, because, you know, the worst case scenario is that people do vote, no matter how they vote, Republican or Democrat, hoping they vote Democrat, quote unquote, me not, but nevertheless, you know, as long as they vote. But we don't want anything to be a hampering circumstance to prevent them from doing that. So that's what we did here in the state of Michigan and in our city.
And so, and the second part of the question really is around, you know, Jim and I talked about this, you know, yesterday, about the fact that normally when you have to get an ID, they ask you for an address. Or
yes.
When you, you know, so what happens, what do you say to the people out there who do not have a home, that are homeless? How do you propose that we get them identification cards? Because they're citizens just as well.
Yes, they are. And this is what we've done here. And I can say, you know, for myself, because I work in this public sector, where I've had parents that were transient, that were living, you know, just really got placed in, you know, you wouldn't call them shelters, but in, you know, temporary housing. The state, you know, that they really didn't want the temporary housing address on there, because
mm-hmm.
they only have like 6 months to stay there, and they really didn't trust having, you know, the appendages of, you know, their relatives knowing their business and getting their information. So primarily we make a recommendation of one or two things. Either we can ascribe to get them like a post office box, or else, you know, they have to be trusting of someone, you know, that they know of, or someone that they receive well as far as getting their personal identification. They have to have some type of address. That's mandatory, because we don't want their information floating out in between the oblivions and someone getting a hold of it and, you know, not telling or predicting what could actually happen. So any type of address, whether it's a associate relative, a trust friend, a post office box, it has to be some type of way, because there may be follow-up correspondences from the state or from the city that needs to be, you know, in the hand of that person. So, you know, any type of address, you just have to be flexible and not tell people, well, you know what, you're going to have to give a home address, because like you said, the situation is a lot of people are not, you know, abiding within a stable, you know, placement or residency. So the option is giving them some flexibility.
Jamie, you had a comment?
I think that would be great, you know, if something like that. That's why when I was talking about, there has to be some sort of streamline, some sort of standards across, you know, maybe from a national level, and in terms of implementation strategies might be different state level, but there has to be some national standards around, you know, what is acceptable, what will work, so that those people that are eligible to vote will have the opportunity to vote. We don't want to disenfranchise anyone who wants to be a part of this process. So it, we have to do a better job of making sure that those that want to be part of this process and that take this voting thing seriously and that believe and they vote for everything, council meetings and city council, they're there for every time the polling booth is open. We don't want to disenfranchise anybody, and that's our elderly. Right. You know, they don't. Some of them don't drive. That's our some of our. You know. There's a report that stated that most of that there's a lot of in that 35,000 range of income. That has a lot to do with if you got a driver's license or a state issue ID, whether it's current, whether it's expired. I mean, there has to be a way to get to the heart of. Alleged voter fraud, whatever, and still making sure that people who want to vote have access to it and that they're not disenfranchised because we've thrown the baby out with the bathwater.
I agree.
Oh, well,
I agree.
Outstanding. Well, I just want to make sure that when you talk about the homeless people, because that's a large voting block. And the fact that when we mention addresses and P.O. boxes, well, in a lot of cases when people are homeless, they don't have jobs, and if they don't have jobs, they won't be able to afford a P.O. box. And in some cases, they are so far removed from their families that they don't have a close relative that's nearby that they can put an address. So that's a component when we talk about the voter's ID, that's a component that we really need to take a comprehensive look at, because true, I think that there should be there should be some accountability, there should be some validity in the process, but we need to make sure that everybody has the same opportunity. Well, that's our show for today, and I would like to thank all of our listeners out there for calling in. And also, before we go, I want to mention one thing. This summer, TaylorMade Training and Consulting, along with Faith Missionary Baptist Church, is conducting its inaugural summer feeding program. Now, there are three ways that you can help us out. One, go to our website at TaylorMade101.com and click on Hunger Free. There you'll see a radio button that we take secure donations. The second way that you can help is to fill out the registration form to participate as a volunteer. Now, there's a lot of things that you can do by volunteering. You can come out. You can help set out the food in the morning time. You can help set up with luncheon. And we have programming that we're going to be offering over the summertime to a lot of different kids. We're going to be talking about, the academics, math, science, the STEM category, science, technology, engineering, mathematics. We're going to talk about geography. We're going to be talking about etiquette. We're going to be talking about science, philosophy, and art and poetry. So we're going to do an array of activities this summer, and so we need you to come out there and help us support. And the third way that you can help is tell somebody. You may not be in a position to help us out, but there are a lot of different other people that would like to do this or don't have anything that they're going to be doing for the summer. Teachers are going to be off, so I would be more than likely to have them come out. Remember Matthew 25:35-40 says, "For I was hungry, and ye have gave me meat. When I was thirsty, ye gave me drink. I was a stranger, and you took me in. Naked, and you clothed me. I was sick, and you visited. I was in prison, and you came unto me. Then shall the righteous answer him, saying, Lord, when shall we thee and hunger and feed thee, or thirsty and give thee drink? When saw we thee a stranger and took thee in, or naked and clothed thee? Or when we saw we sick or in prison and came unto thee? And the king shall answer and say unto them, Verily I say unto you, inasmuch as you have done it unto one of the least of thee, my brethren, you have done it to me." You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. I'm your host, Patrick Cook, coming to you live from Dallas, Texas, as I do every Sunday at 4 p.m. Central Time, 5 o'clock Eastern. We are the number one resource for small business and nonprofits. Don't forget to bookmark this site and visit my blog at TaylorMadeTalkRadio.blogspot.com. That's T-A-I-L-O-R-M-A-D-E. LORMADE talkradio.blogspot.com. Until next time, remember, it is written, my people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge. So stay engaged, stay informed, and stay plugged in to current events with Patrick Cook. You're listening to the sounds of Joyce Spencer in Sweet Dreams. Take us away, Joyce.